Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
There is an author among us, and that's what we're going to talk. We're going to talk about a book this morning just out. UMW's Dr. Stephen Farnsworth is with us. Dr. Farnsworth, it is great to have you here. We have you in frequently to talk current events, and we've talked about some of your books before, but not really spent a whole time when one has come out. And this one is, I will say right off the top, I've read about 2/3 of it. Presidential Communication and Character. What a great book!
Thanks, Ted.
It really is good. It really is. Because I said to you, this is a good resource as you read this, and because you cover basically from Clinton to Trump.
That's right. We look at the four presidents of the internet age, how they approached the media, how they tried to sell themselves to the public through the media. And it's really striking to me that each of these presidents had a very different strategy. And maybe that's because they had kind of a different media environment. If you think about Bill Clinton, that was a talk show president. You think about George W. Bush, that was when Fox News became really prominent. Obama, I think he was best at Facebook and social media, and YouTube. And then Trump, of course. Trump was born for Twitter.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see any additions, and updates to this book in the years ahead that you're able to do as the presidency goes on. Because just to start with Trump, just what he's doing with Twitter, we couldn't have imagined a few years ago that a president of all people would use Twitter the way he has, and that's become, I guess, his way to communicate.
Well, it absolutely works well for Donald Trump. If you remember during the debates, he found himself often bored when the conversation went to policy. And so the format of Twitter, which really just gives you a paragraph or less to say what you're thinking, is ideal for Trump because he's got a very good instinct of a quick cutting phrase that he can offer to undermine his opponents or promote his ideas. And that's a vehicle that is ideally suited to that sort of soundbite, if you will, or maybe even a sound bark. Maybe it's not even a bite.
And I like that sound bark.
And that creates the narrative of the day. I think that journalists tend to be, present company accepted, committed to the process of covering news on the basis of what's actually happening at that moment.
Yeah.
It's sort of like six-year-olds. They all chase the soccer ball. There isn't a team. There isn't a play. There isn't a long-term plan. But I think if you see journalists chasing the Twitter musings of Donald Trump, you're looking at the same sort of thing as six-year-olds going on the soccer field.
Yeah, no, exactly. At the end of the book, in speaking of Trump, I found it interesting you said whether Trump is the start of a new era in presidential communication will depend largely on the success of his presidency. Nothing succeeds like success, as the saying goes. So that's why, I guess, as we talk about Trump and communication and the way he does it, this is a to-be-continued kind of thing.
Well, it absolutely is. I mean, if you listen to the conversation that's going on in the country now about possible people running against Donald Trump in 2020, you're hearing a lot more celebrities than you've heard in the past. I mean, people are talking about Oprah. People are talking about, there's Tom Hanks. There's The Rock. I don't know how serious that is. But the reality is there's a certain illogic to all of this. You would never go to a dentist who has never been a dentist before and say, let's get to work. You would never say, I want to be the first person ever to have this surgery. You don't want to hire somebody without expertise for anything else in your life. When we get mortgages for our homes, when we even getting our hair cut. We want somebody who knows what they're doing. And it is illogical in the extreme to say, we care about experience in every single thing except, let's say the most important job in the world. And that may be a voice of real frustration in the country that someone like Trump emerges. I think that part of the reason why Trump is president is there was just such a high level of frustration with establishment politics, experienced politicians, and they just said, well, okay, let's see who else can we get? What else, how can we do this differently? But the price of that is pretty high. I mean, if you look at the challenges that Trump has had being consistent on policy, if you look at the difficulties he's had in working with others, look, there has been record turnover in this administration.
Yeah.
Even very top positions like Secretary of State and Chief of Staff, they're already going through another round of new people. And the current Chief of Staff doesn't look like he's going to be there all that much longer either. So you really are seeing what you might have expected when Donald Trump was a candidate, a really chaotic White House, one that's really difficult, finds it difficult to put anything forward. That's why Obamacare wasn't repealed and replaced, because they're learning how to do the job while they're doing the job. It's sort of like trying to repair an airplane while it's in the air. Not a good strategy, perhaps. But if in the end people think that Donald Trump has learned enough and he has been effective enough as the 2020 election approaches, we might very well get another term. I think those people who are saying that Trump is absolutely not going to be reelected, you know, I don't know that the odds are 50-50 that he gets another term at this point, but it's not outside the realm of possibility at all.
I remember talking to you gave a talk at the college to a group just a couple days after the election. And broke down the numbers and everything and talked about a lot of this, that, you know, never before had somebody who had no political experience been elected to something, you know, had been elected to the presidency. And I guess, you know, like you say, Trump's success will determine, you know, who candidates in the future are.
Right. And remember, what Trump was good at was media. That was his real skill. He didn't have all that sophisticated a policy for taxes or healthcare or foreign policy. All he had was this idea that he could speak to that anger that was out there in America, and he channeled it very effectively. And when you look at the Trump presidency, you're also seeing it as a very media-focused presidency. Almost every weekday, Donald Trump is on Twitter before 7 a.m., and he's having comments that are going to shape the conversation in this country, indeed the world, for the next day. But he sets the agenda in a way that even masters of television would envy. Ronald Reagan had an agenda of the day plan.
Yeah.
And so every morning, the White House staff would get together and they would talk about what they want to talk about for the reporters that day to shape the story on the evening news. That is child's play compared to winning the news cycle every moment with Twitter. It is really, really amazing how aggressively Donald Trump tries to shape the discourse in the country and how successful he is at making America talk about what Donald Trump wants to talk about today.
Interesting. As you put this book together, did you come up? And again, is this book number six for you? You've done six books. And a lot of them have been in this realm or in talking about similar topics. But anything surprise you as you put this together and looked at the way media has changed? And you really are chronic. It's really a chronology in a way of all the different media things. And we'll get into that as we go along. But surprised at anything?
Well, you know, one of the things that's really striking about the Donald Trump presidency is the extent to which people who like Donald Trump or who don't like Donald Trump focus almost entirely on Donald Trump as a person. Normally, when people evaluate presidents, if we look at polls with respect to President Obama or Bush or Clinton, a lot of how they felt about those presidents was related to policy issues. They didn't like how they handled health care, or they did like how they handled something else. And so there was a lot of policy-oriented conversation in terms of the evaluation of a president. With Trump, there's very little of that. For people who like him and people who don't like him, it's largely about who he is. The people who don't like him think that he's incompetent. Even the people who like him say maybe he shouldn't tweet so much. It's not sure that it's helpful. But they like that Donald Trump stands up to these special interests, or so it seems. And so the polls are really, really very clear that when Americans are evaluating Donald Trump, they are not evaluating him the way they evaluated these last three presidents. And part of it, I think, has to do with the fact that Twitter really allows Trump to be very clear about who he is as a person. It is a very unvarnished medium. And so you get the opportunity for Donald Trump's anger to be very clear to the country, or his pride, or whatever term you might want to use, because one person's pride is another person's arrogance.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and hence, because of that, I guess, that's why you say that it's still too soon to say that it's a given that, you know, that he won't be reelected, say.
Well, it's important to remember that America is a short attention span country. We will remember what happened yesterday. But when you're thinking about a four-year presidential term, the first year, the second year, that may not make all that much difference if the something that happens in the third year or the fourth year is really more significant and prominent. If you think about Bill Clinton, for example, in the first 2 years of his presidency, he had this health care plan that went nowhere.
Yeah.
And it was a colossal problem for the Democrats. They lost 50-some seats in the 1994 midterm election. But 2 years later, Bill Clinton comes back and is reelected in 1996. And a lot of that had to do with the way that Bill Clinton retooled. He said, okay, the first 2 years didn't go so well. How are we going to make the next two work better? Same thing with Barack Obama. If you look at the first 2 years of the Obama presidency, again, healthcare bill. Now, this one passed, unlike Clinton's, but it created a real backlash, and the Republicans picked up 60 seats or so in the House. Again, Obama has to figure out, how can I retool to make people feel better about the Obama presidency? And he does that, and then he's back. George W. Bush didn't really have this issue in 2002 because of 9/11. He didn't really have to deal with that kind of powerful reaction pretty early on in his presidency. 9/11 was able to sort of, I think, create a sort of a high level of public approval for Bush that really lasted until after the 2004 re-election. Bush's real troubles came in 2005 when the resistance in Iraq got bigger and Katrina hit, and the administration's response was seen as woefully inadequate.
Yeah. Dr. Stephen Farnsworth here this morning, the Director of Political Science and International Affairs and the Director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies at the University of Mary Washington. The book is Presidential Communication and Character. I guess you can get it on the internet. Can you get it? Is it in bookstores around here?
You can get it on Amazon if you want. You can get it online with various bookstores. Barnes & Noble has it. Amazon.
Okay. So it's around. It really is a good read. Presidential Communication and Character. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Stephen Farnsworth here. The book is Presidential Communication and Character, White House News Management from Clinton and Cable to Twitter and Trump. We talked about where it's at, and I guess we should mention, and we'll mention a couple more times, you can also get it at the University of Mary Washington College bookstore.
That's right.
So all kinds of places. It really is a good read, very comprehensive on over the years. Starting with Clinton is interesting because it seems like that was about the time that a lot of the media, that some of the things that now we take for granted, the internet and all, started coming into focus.
Right. I mean, the Clinton White House was the first White House to have a web page. And I have an illustration in the book of what that Clinton web page looked like. And it was really, really lame by any sort of reasonable modern standard. But it was all you could do in 2000. You think about the kind of internet access we had almost 20 years ago, the dial-up. You know, how long it would take a page to load. I mean, if you think back to those horse and buggy days of the internet, you can understand why the page was really, really limited in what it did. But what's really striking to me about the Clinton web page and the Clinton web presence versus every president who's come afterward is that the Clinton page was more about the White House, the history of the presidency, the history of the building itself, the White House, whereas each of the other presidents that have come after Clinton, have been increasingly focused on promoting themselves, promoting their policy agenda. The pictures for each president, whether it's Bush or Obama or Trump, are bigger pictures of the president. You know, they're more visible pictures of the president. And by the time we have the Trump webpage, you have a big, huge picture of Trump at a State of the Union speech with the two Republicans behind him, the vice president and the Speaker of the House. So you see that you have gone from a couple of little flags flying in the breeze in the Clinton webpage to all Trump all the time at the Trump White House webpage.
I was going to mention that too, because just to see that picture, you realize how far web pages have gone, and that's what a great example there of just how the basic thing and what's emphasized.
Well, and I had my students read a couple of chapters of this book in my presidency class this semester, and one of the things that I was really interested in was, you know, what they thought about these different web pages. And my presidency class students were really, really interested in what it looked like then, because it's important to remember that today's 20-year-olds, they were born right about the time that Bill Clinton was getting impeached.
Yeah.
And that means their first political memories are vague ideas that something was happening at 9/11. And so, you know, one of the things that you always have to remember when you're a college professor is what you remember isn't what they remember.
Yeah.
And so now, in another couple of years, the students in my classes won't have any recollection of 9/11. They won't even remember it vaguely as, oh, they canceled school that day, or we had a big assembly, mm-hmm. or my parents were really upset, or whatever. A little kid would remember about that time. There won't even be that kind of recollection. It'll be as distant from college students' minds as the Battle of Thermopylae.
Hmm. Wherever that was. So you're,
ancient Greece, actually.
So, interesting. The great, you've got a chart here about main sources of news for U.S. consumers, 1992 to 2016. Not a surprise, but it's fascinating to look at the numbers. 1992, 82% for TV, 2016, 57%. Newspapers in 92, 57%, 20%. For newspaper, no internet in 92 or doesn't show up as far as for, you know,
we didn't
a news
even
source.
Ask the question.
Okay, 38% now. So and you figure that the internet will continue to go up. Interesting, in 1992 though, 12% for radio, 25% for radio in 2016. Is that because of talk radio?
Well, it is indeed because of talk radio. It's important to remember that people are consuming the media where they are. And as commutes have gotten longer and as people are busier, you see more and more use of radio for news. Talk radio, I think, has really drawn a big audience to radio that didn't exist, say, before Bill Clinton was president, mm-hmm. because talk radio really got its start, in the modern era at least, in response to Bill Clinton. A lot of the conservative voices really became pretty prominent, people like Rush Limbaugh in this era. And so you saw a very, very different kind of dynamic there. But as I worked for 10 years as a newspaper journalist before I went to graduate school and get a PhD, and, you know, it is a great loss, I think, to think about how little newspapers contribute to the conversation today. Because in many ways, some of the best work that's being done in journalism is being done in newspapers. You have more of an opportunity to cover an issue in greater depth in a newspaper. You have the opportunity to investigate. Generally, the newsrooms mm-hmm. are larger, and that means much more broad coverage of a community in the case of Washington, the various agencies. And so it's a great loss, because for whatever you might see and like about television, it tends to be more of a headline service. And it tends to be really increasingly, if you think about like what's being aired on Fox News or CNN or MSNBC, wherever your politics may take you in television, they're talk shows. They're just opinions. There isn't that much fact. There isn't that much reporting in the modern television environment. But I do think there's one other important thing to know about where we're getting our news, and that is that television isn't dead. You know, everyone thinks that everything is about the internet and politics, but that's not exactly true. What happens online is important, but if you're thinking about who is voting, that skews older, and that means the internet isn't as crucial to those folks. And when people go online, they're not going online for sources that exist only online. They're going to WashingtonPost.com, CNN.com, FoxNews.com. They're going to those same traditional media outlets on television or in newspapering that give them the kind of information that they then feed off from. And if you're thinking about, like, even on Twitter, you know, an awful lot of what's on Twitter, where I'm on Twitter, and you can follow me on Twitter if you like, but I find that a lot of what's on Twitter is somebody commenting about what was in the New York Times or what was in the Washington Post or what investigative report is out there. And so you see a great deal of opportunity, I think, for people to go online, but what they're getting online tends to be those same kind of traditional news outlets. So I think it's important to remember that it isn't as if one thing totally replaces another. When we talk about the media age, we're really talking about this really, I guess you can think of it as kind of like a news stew. And different as we change in time, you know, maybe that stew gets a little saltier, maybe it gets a little spicier as different media outlets come and go, but they're all still in the conversation. And that means that things haven't maybe changed as much as we might think.
And a lot of times when a big issue, something, a big story happens, you might see it on the internet, you might see it on Twitter, and a lot of times you go and you turn on TV to see it happening.
Well, and that's still where it is. I mean, if you're thinking about, you know, the way that we reacted to 9/11, for example, well, you know, that's the same way that people reacted to the Kennedy assassination in 1963. They said, where's the TV? How can I get in front of a TV?
Yeah.
And that was how they reacted. And my guess is that, you know, God forbid something like this happens again, you know, we'd do the same thing. We would not be satisfied with following the Twitter feed. We'd want to see it on television. And that is the real power, I think, of that particular media outlet. That is, it is the opportunity for people not just to read the words, not just to hear the words, but to see the image of what's actually happening. And that can, you know, that brings all your senses into play.
How long did it take you to write this?
Well, you know, these books don't write themselves.
Yeah.
You know, this is an idea that I've been, you know, thinking about and working with for a couple of years. The way that books like this get written, I start thinking about a conference paper or two. I go to talk to other political scientists and, you know, have a preliminary version of one of the chapters. I present it. They comment on it. I talk to my friends who also study the media and the presidency. Does this make sense? Is this argument viable? And little by little, yeah, I get this kind of feedback, and then I move forward with the project. I show some of the tables, the data tables, to my students. You know, I test drive some of the arguments in class, see if the students find it compelling, see if they what they react to it, and I have, you know, good ideas from them. And then, of course, you know, once the manuscript itself is done, you know, then it goes out to a couple of other scholars who look at this and offer critiques, and then it gets polished up a little bit more. It's a collaborative process that takes a couple of years, really, but I can't take too long. Because one of the realities of American politics is that the presidents aren't there very long.
Yeah.
And so if you don't get a book out that has some rapidity to it, there's already going to be another president, and you're going to have to write another chapter. In all honesty, you know, this Trump chapter, I have a, you know, part of the book is devoted to Donald Trump. That's something I had to do on the fly. During the last year, I wrote the chapter in the spring after I'd seen about 100 days of the Trump presidency, and then I had to regularly update it. Will, you know, because there is a kind of Perils of Pauline quality to the Trump presidency. It's like a reality show with cliffhangers.
Yeah.
Will he get that repeal and replace bill through Congress? Will he get his tax bill through? Will Rex Tillerson stay as Secretary of State? Will Sean Spicer stay as White House Press Secretary? You know, tune in next week. Well, you know, I have to write a book that goes into print, and that is when the time stops. And so what we decided to do was basically when we had the ruling from Congress that they were not going to repeal and replace Obamacare, then I, you know, basically sent it off to the publisher. And then I made a few additions with respect to the ongoing Russia investigation. So I'm basically covering the first year of the Trump presidency, but this is the fastest turnaround as I've ever done on any of my books. But Donald Trump requires that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wait another 6 months, who knows what might happen between now and then.
Presidential Communication and Character. Dr. Stephen Farnsworth is the author, and you can get it online. You can get it at the UMW bookstore. You can get it around here. It is all around. It really is a good read. Presidential Communication and Character. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:32.
Okay, listen. We got to talk about something.
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station.
Hey.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Stephen Farnsworth here, the Director of Political Science and International Affairs at UMW, also the Director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies there. The book, Presidential Communication and Character, it is brand new and a great read about Clinton to the present as far as the presidency goes. But you also look at history. I mean, you talk a lot about, you talked about John Adams and a thing that I didn't know, that he tried to double down, and if anybody that criticized the government, he wanted to come down hard on.
Yeah, anyone who says our politics have never been worse, let me introduce you to the John Adams presidency. This was a time of extraordinarily divisive politics. I talk in the book a little bit about the Alien and Sedition Acts, which were a set of laws produced in John Adams' presidency right before 1800 that basically criminalized dissent. You said something about the government that was negative, you call them into disrepute, criticize them in some way, you could be subject to imprisonment and fine. And there were newspaper editors who were jailed. There was even a member of Congress jailed, a dissident anti-Adams politician, who were jailed for this law. Now, Thomas Jefferson becomes president in 1800, and he was opposed to the law. He thought it was a joke, and so that the law wasn't enforced after that. But when you look at the 1790s, when you think about the kind of fights between the Jeffersonians and the Hamiltonians in that day, you really see things that actually sound kind of familiar. They may not have had sophisticated technology, but they had the same sort of trench warfare partisan politics that we see today.
It is so interesting when you look over the years, Dr. Farnsworth, when you think about just how the media covers things now and things that they didn't cover with FDR or with JFK or even with Woodrow Wilson for the long period of time that he was incapacitated.
Yeah, I think that that when we look at the media across much of American history, we can find pretty much in many different eras things that were problematic. I think when you talk about Woodrow Wilson, for example, he had a stroke in the last year of his presidency. He wasn't really competent to be president as far as we could tell. There weren't a lot of people who could understand him. His speech was not clear, but Mrs. Wilson was able to hear him. He would whisper into her ear, and she would say what he said. Now, I sometimes think that maybe Mrs. Wilson was the first female president, but we don't know for sure whether she really did hear what Woodrow Wilson was saying, or she just decided, here's my chance to make some policy, even before, of course, women had the right to vote in that era. So we might have had the first female president, effectively, in that last year of the Woodrow Wilson presidency, but the public didn't know about how sick he was. And that was true when you think about FDR in 1944. I have looked at some of the newsreels and the images of FDR when he campaigned for re-election that year. And this was a fundamentally, horrifically sick man. You didn't need to be a medical expert to just see how much those 12 years of covering depression and war took out of this man, who wasn't actually all that healthy to begin with. And so he was struggling. Really struggling in 1944 when you look at those images, knowing that he only lived until April of 45. He wasn't 6 months after the election he was dead because of what the stress he'd been under and the health troubles that he had. But the public didn't know in 1944 how sick he was.
Yeah.
And so, and when you think about Bill Clinton and his misconduct, plenty of other presidents have had affairs. Plenty of other presidents have been engaged in extramarital activities, but we didn't know about it at the time because the press wasn't as aggressive on dealing with these personal matters, these issues of character. I think on balance, we're probably better off that the reporters don't keep secrets from the public about the misconduct of elected officials. I, on balance, think we're much better off on that point. But there's no doubt about it. It creates a certain corrosive public cynicism as well, because you just look at these people and you just think, my goodness, one horrible person after another, one flaw after another. We all have feet of clay, but it's nice not to be reminded of it at every opportunity.
As I read your book, I wondered if, and this is all you're guessing here, but with the way things are covered or with the way with the way media, whether it's internet or TV or even Twitter, you wonder if somebody like LBJ or even Richard Nixon could get elected today. Just because LBJ just seemed so, you watch things of his, and to me, he just seems very, he seemed very awkward.
Well, no doubt about it. When you think about the skills that make you a good candidate for television, those are not the skills that make you a good president or a good lawmaker necessarily. I think what Donald Trump has done, and what Obama before him, and George W. Bush, and Bill Clinton, all of them, they had a very good sense for the media of the moment. They had a very good sense of how to sell themselves to the country, given the technology, mm-hmm. given the dominant news sources of the day. And that reality helped elect them president. But I'm not so sure that even Bill Clinton would necessarily be elected today. If you think about the Democratic Party and how the anger with Bush and now with Trump has created a lot of power in the Democratic Party for the far left. I mean, who would imagine that Bernie Sanders would be a viable challenger for the presidency? If you think about the Democratic Party of 2004 or of 2000 or the 1990s, Bernie Sanders would not have gotten very far. But now he almost made it to the top. And the same thing about Donald Trump. I think that the technology of the moment is very, very useful to Donald Trump. But I don't think that Donald Trump would have done as well if this had been the 1990s and he had to be on a lot of talk shows and come across the way that he does. His anger is raw. It is, I think, disconcerting if you get too much of it for a lot of people. But it works very well on Twitter when you just can say what you're thinking and move on. So I think that it is important to recognize that a lot of presidents wouldn't necessarily have done all that well. Yeah. I mean, and including our greatest ones. You know, if you think about Abraham Lincoln, you know, Abraham Lincoln on Twitter.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln on a late night comedy show. You know, imagine Jimmy Fallon next to Abraham Lincoln and what that would sound like.
Right.
My guess is it probably wouldn't help the Lincoln presidential campaign.
Yeah. You have a whole chapter on the Fox News presidency of George W. Bush. It's a pretty lengthy chapter. You've got a lot of charts in it. It studied a lot and really delve into Fox News and what it meant to the Bush presidency and others.
Yeah, I think one of the things to remember about the current media environment is that people can go and listen to the news they want to hear, the way that they wish America were. And that's true for the left and the right. You have the chance to hear very, very critical conversations about Obama on Fox News and very, very supportive conversations about Obama somewhere else. And flip the channels and you can hear the same thing about Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what Bush did was, during his presidency, was really figure out that the best way to make himself a national figure was to cozy up to Fox News. And so during the campaign, when he went up against McCain, he was able to generate in the Republican primary a lot of support for himself by spending a lot of time on Fox, talking to a lot of Fox people. Reporters like to have politicians talk to them. It makes their shows more interesting. It gives them material to work with. And so it can work out very well for both sides, right? Fox News gets a lot of time with Bush. Bush gets a lot of time on Fox News. Fox News viewers, there are more of them because Bush is on, and they're more supportive of Bush because Bush is on Fox News.
Yeah.
So it all works out pretty well. The challenge, though, is how you cover somebody like this, because presidents have good days and bad days. And one of the realities of the Bush presidency was that fundamental mistake about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. You had this idea before the war started that Saddam Hussein was connected to 9/11, that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, that there were was an ongoing weapons of mass destruction program in Iraq. Now, a lot of people in the immediate aftermath of 9/11, we're inclined to believe the worst. We now know that Saddam Hussein is perhaps the world's worst poker player. He didn't have any of these things.
Yeah.
But he convinced America that he did. And so as a result, we have this war, and we weren't welcomed as liberators. It didn't just cost a couple billion dollars. It wasn't over in a minute. We're still there.
Yep.
And so the Bush presidency had to deal with the fact that the evidence after the fact didn't square with the evidence before the fact. But one of the things that we learned when we looked at the polling about what Fox News viewers thought about President Bush versus people who were watching other media outlets is that they were still inclined to believe the stories about the weapons of mass destruction claim. The theory was that they just hadn't looked hard enough, that there was still weapons of mass destruction out there. Well, I think probably 15 years into the Iraq War, we've got a pretty good idea of whether or not there was a weapons of mass destruction in Iraq program going on, and the answer is that there wasn't. But the polls do show that even years after the invasion, all Fox News viewers were much more inclined to believe that there was this this impact, that there were still weapons of mass destruction. Similarly, with respect to the allegations that Obama wasn't born in the United States, the people who were listening more to conservative news, they were seeing, we see in public polling that they were more inclined to believe that Obama wasn't a Christian, that he wasn't born in America, versus people who were listening to CNN or some other news source. So what you have now is no agreement on what the facts are. And that creates a really difficult opportunity for a national conversation about anything. You know, I think most Americans would say it'd be nice if everyone had health insurance. The question is, can we afford it? How would we do it? Okay, these are questions about how one might get forward. But if you can't even agree on what the problem is, you know, then you can't have a serious conversation about how to fix it. If you don't know what the evidence is, and if you have very different ideas about what the evidence is, you're never going to get anywhere with these problems. And so these things fester year after year, generation after generation. I mean, you know, some things are maybe, you know, insolvable. I don't know that anybody's got a good idea about what to do in North Korea, okay? But maybe some things can be improved. You know, we can figure out a way to make sure that Social Security is on a solid footing for the next generation. We can figure out what are the costs and benefits of tax cuts and when are they more useful and when are they less. These are all evidentiary questions. But we can't even agree on the evidence because we are gone to the four winds when we talk about news content and evidence because of the different news we consume.
And because of that, and as I was reading this, the thought that came to my mind was, with whether it's Twitter, the internet, all the areas where we do get information now, are we any better off than our grandparents were?
Well, in a lot of ways we are. But it requires us to be a lot more responsible. I mean, you know, I grew up in a small farming town in the middle of nowhere, and at night I'd listen to the radio and I could get a radio broadcast from, you know, Washington or from Boston or
yep, that was me.
Yeah. And you know, and it was so cool. It's like, this is what the people, you know, off the farm are listening to. This is what the world sounds like.
Yeah.
And now, it wasn't always that I really wanted to know about the you know, what was going on in Boston or DC, but it was like, but you know, here you would hear the news and here you would hear something that made you feel like the world was a little smaller, because I feel like I grew up a million miles from everywhere. And now, you know, a little kid in my little town has the internet, and they can become expert in languages. They can become experts in parts of the world that we didn't even know existed. They can listen to radio broadcasts online from all over the world. It's just amazing what they have.
Yeah.
The problem, though, is we now have to become our own editor. We have to figure out what's true and what's not. Back in the old days, we had people who did that for us, and their judgment may not have always been all that good.
Which we talked about, yeah.
But the truth is that there was somebody who did that job for us, and now we have to do it for ourselves, and that requires a higher level of responsibility. If something doesn't seem true, it probably isn't. You know, that's the reality. I mean, very difficult to imagine that a person could become president in this country who wasn't born in this country, you know. That fraud could be perpetrated in a highly critical environment. Mm-hmm. You have to be so convinced of such a profound conspiracy, it boggles the mind. You know, it's like the moon landing being faked or something. How could that possibly happen? It would be cheaper to go to the moon than to create a fraud about going to the moon and keep it going for 60 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Stephen Farnsworth here, Director of Political Science and International Affairs at UMW, also the Director of the Center for Leadership and Media Studies, the book, Presidential Communication and Character. We'll wrap it up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Stephen Farnsworth from UMW here. Presidential Communication and Character, the book. It's just out. You can get it online. You said you can get it at the UMW bookstore. And
Amazon has it.
So it really is. What I like about it, Dr. Farnsworth, is you can be left or right, and this you don't make you present it all. You've got tables, you've got charts. You can make up your own mind on this. It's a great read.
Well, thank you, Ted.
So get it. I've circled things, and I've just thought that I will use this book. So what's next?
Well, you know, I've always sort of been drawn to issues in terms of presidential communication, and this issue of media and the presidency has really sort of motivated a lot of my research over my career. But you know, this next idea, and it largely came to me from my students, is political humor on late night television, and it's dealing with how presidents are treated on late night TV. I think that we really are looking. I've written a chapter of it already because. You know, again, when you're talking about American presidents, you have to really move because they're not president all that long. Although, if you don't like the president, it may seem long. But for most of us, you know, the reality is that they come and pass by very quickly. And so I'm really interested in how late night is treating these things because, you know, there's been an amazing change for viewers and of late night comedy of a certain age. We can remember Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
And Johnny Carson really had a pretty soft touch. You know, he'd make a joke about Reagan playing golf and, you know, not remembering things or something.
But you didn't take it personally.
But it was never, never this kind of assault that you see with comedy today. I mean, you know, the treatment of Trump is very harsh. The treatment of Clinton was very harsh. Now, Obama kind of got a soft touch, but part of that had to do with the way that he engaged. I mean, you know, Obama would be out there doing things like Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis, talking about how people should get connected to healthcare. And he would give and take and make jokes. It was he was really good at that. He was on ESPN talking about his March Madness picks. Now, he may have been a little pro-Duke for my taste, but
yeah.
The reality is that that he could engage with people who wouldn't necessarily care a lot about politics. And so he did YouTube interviews with YouTube celebrities. But and he slow jammed the news, and he did all these things that really made him connected to that. And that is where a lot of students are getting their news now. The Daily Show doesn't make sense if you don't know who Mitch McConnell is. If you think about these issues that come up, to get the jokes, you need to have this sort of base political knowledge. And so you really do see more and more people learning a lot about politics from the late night comics. It's not necessarily what the founders would have had in mind for a free press, but you have to appreciate the fact that these shows draw an audience. They shape the way in which people learn about politics, and they shape the way in which people react to politics. That is a good thing, maybe, in terms of getting more people engaged. Whether it's a bad thing or not, well, I'll have to write the book to
yeah.
see.
Yeah, I was going to say, and as you write the book and you come in here and we talk, I'll see how the book's going, and we can talk about what you've discovered. That sounds really good. Again, it's a Presidential Communication and Character, White House News Management from Clinton and Cable to Twitter and Trump. Dr. Stephen Farnsworth, and just get it's a great read, and it hasn't been out all that long, and you can. Get it on your Kindle, and or you can carry the hard copy around.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you for writing this book, because again, this is there's a lot of history in this book, and we thank you. And I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of the different topics as you come in over time with what's going on. We didn't get a chance to talk about the General Assembly. We'll get you in. And we'll talk current events one of these days.
Of course, the session's not over yet.
Yes.
Thanks again, Ted. It's always great to be here on Town Talk.
Dr. Stephen Farnsworth here again, Presidential Communication and Character. That's it. We'll see you Monday on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.